KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, inviting you to experience the science of story. 6 days of programming celebrating how and why we tell the stories that move us from July 23rd through the 28th at UC San Diego. Events include Clarion Writers Masterclass, A Tale of Two Sulus, an evening with George Takei and John Cho, Star Trek in concert with the San Diego Symphony, and more. For information, visit artpower.ucsd.edu.
Welcome in San Diego, it's Jade Hindman. On today's Midday Edition, racial bias in a kidney test prevented thousands of Black patients from getting the transplants they needed. We'll talk about how race is used in medical practice. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. For years, a racially biased lab test prevented thousands of Black patients from getting kidney transplants. Well, now that racial bias has been removed from the test, and more than 14,000 Black patients have been moved up the transplant list. The test is called the GFR. It determines kidney function based on how much a waste compound called creatinine gets filtered from your blood. If the levels are high, it means the kidneys may not be working well. So how did a racial bias find its way into what seemed like a straightforward test? Well, in short, creatinine is a byproduct of muscle, and when a small number of Black patients had higher creatinine levels in early clinical trials for GFR, researchers pointed to a false assumption that all Black people had higher muscle mass and therefore higher creatinine levels. From there, doctors began applying what they call a race correction to Black patients' GFR scores, which made their kidneys appear healthier than non-Black patients. 2 years ago, the United Network for Organ Sharing, or UNOS, finally required all transplant programs use race-neutral calculations. And last year, they ordered those programs to adjust waiting times for Black patients impacted. More than 2,800 of them have now received a transplant. One of them is Craig Merritt. He shared his experience with NPR's A. Martinez earlier this year.
I picked up the phone. The person on the other end says, "We got one for you. We got a kidney for you." That moment was surreal.
What's life been like since the transplant? I mean, what's changed for you?
Everything. Everything. Because now I have a new lease on life, and the kidney is doing what it's supposed to do.
Through everything that you've been through, have you thought about all of the Black patients that have died because they were put further back on a transplant list because of an evaluation that factored in the race?
Absolutely. And that's what angers me the most. And now my passion and my ministry moving forward is to ensure that Black and Brown communities, that we have the education, that we are in the know. I convert that angry energy into something that will help others going forward.
Well, here in San Diego, medical centers including UC San Diego, Sharp, Kaiser, and Scripps tell KPBS they moved to race-neutral calculations of kidney function. According to Scripps Health, 14% of Black patients on their kidney transplant list received an adjustment to their waiting time. And today on Midday Edition, we're talking about that GFR test and other medically biased diagnostic tools in healthcare. Also, what's being done to address those biases? I'm joined today by Dr. Rodney Hood, President and Chairman of the Multicultural Health Foundation. He's a physician with an expertise in health disparities, medical history, and racism in medical care. Welcome back to Midday Edition, Dr. Hood.
Thank you for having me.
We're so glad you're here. And also Dr. Lou Hart. He's Medical Director of Health Equity for Yale New Haven Health and Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at Yale. Before that, he worked at New York City Health and Hospitals, where he led the Medical E-Racism Initiative. And that program eliminated race-based GFR and other biased tests across the entire medical system. Dr. Hart, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you both here for this conversation. Dr. Hart, I'll start with you. Give us the background on the GFR test. I mean, why did it list results for Black and non-Black patients separately in the first place?
It is a tool to estimate the function of a patient's kidneys based on a simple blood test. And it really was revolutionary in that it allowed us to much better and more accurately estimate how well our patient's kidney function was occurring over time. Unfortunately, when it was first discovered, the researchers found differences between patients in the study. And they found that for the 10% of patients who were identified as Black or African American, they seemed to have very different kidney function than the remainder study participants, who were mostly white, though there were some Hispanic and Asian patients identified, but they were categorized as non-Black. And when comparing those two groups, we saw there was about a 15% difference in kidney function. And as opposed to identifying a difference as a disparity, potentially with social reasons for the difference across the groups, the researchers concluded that this difference in kidney function was a biological difference. And I think it was that flawed understanding of really rigorous research and data that put us into the position of providing different care to our patients as we were managing their kidney disease on the basis of their race. And had the color of their skin been different, they would have been receiving different care. Modern medicine has still a long way to go. And I think a more contemporary understanding of race as a social identity and as a risk factor for racism is not a tool that we should be including haphazardly in our studies without having a better understanding. Because in 2024 and for the past 20 years, we've known that race is not a biological categorization of humans. It is not even a good proxy for ancestry. It's a socio-political tool to categorize people based on how they look or how they identify.
Well, Dr. Hood, what are your thoughts on that? And how have these tests impacted you and your patients in your practice?
So I totally agree with Dr. Hart's assessment. My perspective, let me say this. Dr. Hart graduated from medical school in 2016, and I graduated in 1973. And so I went to a medical school 50 years ago when I was totally against even mentioning race, because at that time it appeared that when somebody identified a Black patient, they treated them differently. And so we fought to say, don't even mention the race. Then we went through a period where we started looking at racial data in a descriptive, comparative way and seeing that there were real differences in outcome. And I've been advocating that we should consider race. I'm not sure I like the term race-based medicine, but comparative, because that's how you define the differences. So in the beginning, I want to suggest that I don't believe clinicians or researchers should take this discussion to suggest that we should not consider race in medicine at all. The problem, as Dr. Hart talked about, was when we incorporate race in these what we call pooled cohort equations or algorithms that actually can cause harm more so than help. And one article that I read in the New England Journal of Medicine concluded that before we use race, we should apply three principles. One, if we're going to use race, is the data good statistical analysis based upon that use? And as he said in the glomerular filtration scenario, there was some data, but it was false data and false assumptions. The second is, if there are differences, is there a plausible explanation for those differences? And in the glomerular filtration rate, I don't really think they looked at what their plausible differences were. And then the third is, if you're going to use this tool, is it going to make things worse, exacerbate disparities, or not? And as we look at not just the glomerular filtration rate, but other tools that have been used throughout medicine, we're finding the same thing with the glomerular filtration rate, that they're being used, but there are unintended consequences where they're actually causing more harm to certain populations than others.
Well, what impact has removing that coefficient for Black and non-Black, what impact has that had on the test results?
I'd like to talk about this really at a deeply personal level. There were patients who were denied access to kidneys or had delayed access to the transplantation list. And some of those patients worked at our hospital. And they were staff members. They were executives. They were frontline clinicians. And they actually, we have a colleague who benefited from having the equation appropriately assess her kidney function using 2021 standards. And she received credit for years that she would have been on the transplant list. And it actually saved her life. She received a kidney transplant. She's doing very well.
Do you see this impact, Dr. Hood, reaching other tests and saving more lives?
Oh, absolutely. I think to talk about the GFR, the articles suggest there were Black patients. First of all, we got to realize Black patients have 3-4 times greater risk of end-stage renal disease than whites. They're on dialysis at higher rates than other ethnicities, yet they have to wait longer for a life-saving transplant. And because the kidney donors are so limited, many times they're on a waiting list, and they use algorithms to determine who gets a transplant and who doesn't. And because of the formula that suggested that Blacks had better renal function than others, sometimes they waited longer than they should have. And so by removing it, hopefully more will move up the line. How much this will, say, in cardiovascular disease, another area is in obstetrics, where they use criteria as far as a woman's risk of giving vaginal delivery after having cesarean sections. And I suggest that Blacks are at greater risk of complications and therefore get more cesarean sections than whites.
Dr. Hood, you have been challenging these algorithms and tests for years. There are other tests that need to be done away with as mm-hmm. well. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Well, my field is internal medicine. And so the ones I'm familiar with are like under, we talked about the kidney, but also under cardiovascular. There's a American Heart Association guidelines to heart failure for what they use to evaluate risk of somebody being admitted to the hospital with acute congestive heart failure as far as whether they're high or low risk. And using that formula, they give whites higher risk where Blacks are lower risk. When I saw that, that made no sense because Blacks have higher rates of congestive heart failure, higher rates of cardiovascular disease. And the rationale for that is not clear. Maybe they're at higher risk because they're white and getting access to processes that Blacks are not. The danger of whites being classified as higher risk, they tend to get, okay, they're higher risk, therefore they need a referral to cardiology and cardiac cath versus these low risk don't. So that's one consequence of misuse, I think, of the data. There is one that I use today, but I understand is going to be changing, that I found may have some very positive uses in the African-American community, and that was the American Heart Association and the arterial cardiovascular risk estimator for 10-year cardiovascular risk. I'm in my office one time, and I got a 50-year-old African-American male, and I'm putting in his numbers for his blood pressure and his cholesterol and whether he smokes and whether he has diabetes, and his risk was 25% risk of having a cardiovascular event in 10 years. And without changing any numbers, I switched them to white, and it went down to 15. When I switched it to a Black female, it was higher than the Black male. And I started asking my colleagues, what is this about? So the first concern was, well, maybe there's something wrong with the data. Well, There was a Jackson Heart study, and they used these risk predictors and found that in the black population, it was fairly accurate. So although when they use race, it was measuring something. The problem with it was that for whites and blacks, it was probably fairly accurate, but for other ethnicities, it was not. And I understand they're now looking at a new tool that doesn't include race. And my concern with that new tool is, will it now decrease or underestimate the risk of African Americans? So that's what I mean by we have to apply those three principles. Certainly, race is not a biological measure, but it may be measuring the physiological responses that blacks have in life.
Coming up, Dr. Rodney Hood talks about when considering race may actually be helpful in healthcare.
Are we measuring physiological responses to the chronic toxic stress of being a black person in America?
More on that when we return. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition.
KPBS On Demand is supported by San Diego Symphony, presenting the 2024 Conrad Prebys Summer Season, starting at the Rady Shell at Jacobs Park on June 28th, with conductor Gemma New and pianist Olga Kern performing Rachmaninoff, Copland, and Rimsky-Korsakov. Tickets at theshell.org.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. We've been talking about a racially biased kidney test that kept thousands of black patients from receiving transplants for decades, and what it highlights about medical racism in healthcare. Right now, I'm speaking with two physicians about how racial bias influences their medical practice and what can be done to mitigate harm. I'm speaking with Dr. Rodney Hood, president and chairman of the Multicultural Health Foundation and a physician and expert on health disparities, medical history, and racism in medical care. Also, Dr. Lou Hart, he's medical director of health equity for Yale New Haven Health and assistant professor of pediatrics at the Yale University School of Medicine. Dr. Hood, now I want to talk about medical mistrust among black patients. I understand you recently visited Montgomery, Alabama to learn more about this. Tell me about that experience and what you learned.
I still have not gotten over my trip to Montgomery. So Montgomery has an equal justice legacy museum, in which a gentleman by the name of Brian Stevenson, who was an attorney, did research and built a museum based upon lynchings that have taken place over the past several hundred years. And he's documented, I think, over 6,000 lynchings and put a memorial there. What he's also done is created a museum that told the history how we got there. So what does this have to do with health? I have a talk, and it's a theory. I call it PTSD, post-traumatic slavery disorder, and postulating that a lot of the chronic illnesses that we see today in African-American community can be traced back to that time period. One of the greatest risk factors for African-American folks is hypertension. We cannot totally explain why African-Americans have greater hypertension and cardiovascular disease than other populations. I don't care where we go. And yet there are social determinants of health. There's income. There's weight, other comorbidities. But when we look at all those factors, we still see race as an independent factor. And I ask the question, are we actually measuring not biological markers with that population, but are we measuring physiological responses to the chronic toxic stress of being a black person in America? Now, I know that's controversial, but there's actually research now being done on that, measuring what they call the allostatic load, where blacks Black women have higher rates of allostatic load as measured by stress hormones, you know, and that type of thing. So I think more research needs to be done along that line.
Dr. Hart, what's your thought on that and on post-traumatic slave disorder?
I think that Dr. Hood is at the cutting edge, as always. There is a really solid developing literature base. It means a lot of things are being written about it in terms of what he's describing as embodiment research or the allostatic load. And it's actually quite compelling. Yes, there's a blueprint, your DNA, but there's also other things that tell which DNA to be active and which to not. And that changes based on the environment you live in. So we actually see some pretty compelling research to show that people's DNA, which is a marker of aging, is shorter if they've experienced overt discrimination in the United States. So I do think that, you know, the brutal transparency is actually going to be pretty eye-opening. If in real time, I have access to data that shows I'm treating people differently based on race in a way that was unbeknownst to me, not as an intentional way to make sure that I'm potentially being more aware of differences that are happening in my population or the people I get to serve. But I definitely want to make sure that at the end of the day, we hold someone accountable for this. Because I don't know when in America's history we've officially said, okay, no more racial discrimination. Mm-hmm. America's long legacy still lives with us today. And I just want to make sure that, to Dr. Hood's point, we study that at the individual level. That we don't just do it all in four big groups, but we really do the critical rigor to understand how is this showing up in the person right in front of me? And wow, a lot of the characteristics that this person have seems to be in their community. And they have a lot of similarities with this and that. Because at the end of the day, once we can better understand these things that we have historically been uncomfortable to talk about, and probably still currently, it still makes people uncomfortable. But it's important to understand, like, this is going to help all of us, personalized medicine, how to improve the care and experience for everyone, not just for those who have been hurt the most. But yes, those who have been hurt the most stand the most to benefit from a system that makes it better for all of us.
A term that I heard both of you all mention is allostatic load. For those who don't know, what is that?
Simply allostasis is something that takes place in all of us, and it's how your body reacts to stress. And the more stress, the higher the allostasis. And if you measure that, they call it the allostatic load. And we know that stress hormones can cause more end-stage disease. Mm-hmm. The other one we haven't mentioned is called ACEs. And that's adverse childhood events. And there was a study that actually first took place here in San Diego at Kaiser in the 1990s, where they looked at patients who had significant adverse childhood events. And the ones that had the higher number or ACE scores as they got older had higher number of diseases, asthma, diabetes, cancer. This was done at Kaiser. Most of them were white, but there was a subgroup of Black and Hispanic. Their ACE scores were higher than the whites. So the chronic stress of being Black, whatever that is, causes more stress, causes a higher allostatic load. And that causes physiological response. That's what I meant by biological. You can have two identical biological folks. One is under stress, the other isn't. The one under stress will probably develop more diseases than the one who isn't.
Hmm. Well, you know, I'm curious, Dr. Hart, what should Black patients do to advocate for themselves, since every doctor is perhaps not factoring in the inaccuracy in some of these tests that have racial biases?
Ultimately, education is key, but in quality and safety, we describe education as a weak corrective action. People tend to hear something one day and then maybe forget about it in a couple days. So I do think that there needs to be a heightened awareness. Do believe that people need to continue to understand that science and medicine is an evolving practice. So as our patients begin to reckon with the real consequence of, you might have been, my doctor who I loved and trusted might have been treating me differently because of my skin color, and it wasn't helping me get better care, I think that that's a really tough pill to swallow, especially given the recent crisis or in lack of trust in public health institutions. And really each other, but even with the field of medicine, physicians and nurses. So I think it's really important for healthcare, and the clinicians, the people who serve patients every day, to have that honest,
transparent conversation around what the past, what had happened in the past, and what we plan to do about it together moving forward. The mm-hmm. biggest thing that gives me hope at night is that the healthcare system, the biggest constituent or stakeholder is the quote unquote customer, the patient, but they are the least empowered in the whole transaction. Mm-hmm. Medicine has become extremely commercialized, and patients seem to be just products of the system as opposed to well-paying customers. And I do think that a more informed and empowered patient, as we switch from kind of fee-for-service models of volume-based healthcare to more patient-centered, patient-driven, what's important to you and how do we work on that to make you as healthy as possible, and in doing so, lower costs. So I do think that clearly education, but it's actually empowering patients in payment reform, where patients have more stake in terms of dictating what are the quality metrics, how transparent we have to be with what describes high quality, safe care. To Dr. Hood's point, are all patients benefiting of that high quality, safe care? Or is it just patients from certain zip codes to patients with disabilities or patients who speak a language other than English? Are they benefiting from the same high quality care that all patients are?
I totally agree. And I think empowerment of the patient and education of the patient, but a significant group of patients, that will happen. Study, write your questions down, ask questions when you see the physician. However, my Multicultural Health Foundation has implemented programs with populations that don't have that education or don't feel comfortable dealing with that different power structure when they go see the physician. And so what is the transformation taking place in the healthcare system to empower them? In America, we always talk about individual empowerment. I think we have to think of a system that collectively empowers them. And one tool is bringing on true community health workers. These are individuals that will help a patient navigate the system, that will actually go to the doctor and help the patient ask the right questions and navigate the system better.
And I know that research has shown that no matter how well-educated some patients are, they still receive disparate treatment when walking into a doctor's office. So if I walk into the doctor's office tomorrow to get labs, can I trust that they are interpreting those labs accurately and to benefit my health in the best way that they can?
You know, to be honest, for the most part, I'd have to say yes. And I don't really think we went back to what providers buy into as far as what a lab means and what a lab doesn't mean. I think there's this whole issue of implicit bias that is very strong in the provider community, whether we want to realize it or not. Yes, data suggests that you may feel comfortable with a provider that looks like you. But I have some providers that look like me I wouldn't want to send my mother to. So, and there are providers that don't look like me who I feel will give my patients, whether they're black or otherwise, better care. So I think you can't look at providers, well, this is a white provider, he's telling me the wrong thing. I think you have to evaluate them individually. And even if we want it, all black patients to go to black providers, that's impossible. There isn't enough of us. And so there are many non-black providers out there that get what I'm talking about, what Dr. Hart is talking about. I think an area that I get concerned with is behavioral health. I don't think there's enough culturally sensitive behavioral health providers out there. I very commonly get patients say, I want a female behavioral health, or I'd like a male, or I'd like, you know, and many times you don't have that option. And I think in behavioral health, sometimes you may have to go to several providers before you find one that you feel comfortable with.
Well, we see how eliminating the racial bias in GFR test, we see the impact that that is having. What are other solutions that you see, Dr. Hart?
Our attempts at changing the equations don't change the fact that African Americans are 3 to 4 times more likely to develop chronic and end-stage kidney disease.
There is much more work ahead. But I think when it comes to solutions, we need to be ready for conversations around how these outcomes seem to persist over time and what are some of the ways that we can either transparently accept that this is what we want, this is the system that benefits us the most, or how we actually peel away and start to realize that, well, profits are great and people can thrive in a society that's built like ours. People are also left behind. And it's just whether we want that to happen in healthcare or not. Our current practice and the experience speaks for itself. So I think in ways in which I'm very optimistic about solutions coming forward is an actual recent revision to a federal law, the Affordable Care Act. And there's a section of it, Section 1557, that now explicitly makes it against federal law and a violation of civil rights acts and of the Affordable Care Act to use a race-based clinical decision support tool that discriminates on the basis of race, age, sex, national origin, or color. And this is going to be very interesting to see how healthcare systems, we have 300 days to review all of the algorithms or all the clinical decision support tools that use these characteristics, and how health systems are held accountable with financial liability, with reputational tarnish, will be really interesting to see play out, because the federal government is clearly sending a message that, well, we want to acknowledge that there is difference between persons. We want to ensure we're doing something about it. So I really, truly believe it's going to be an uphill battle given how entrenched the current system is, but that we can switch and make continued progress to how we incentivize hospitals. I am very optimistic that payment reform can incentivize good behavior, can incentivize providing patients with doulas and community health workers, providing more resources so that a good outcome brings the most revenue. I really think that we can do something in a system that has so much promise, given the amount of technology and a lot of the brilliance that exists here in America and abroad. I really think that we can make the system better for all of us. So maybe that's just me being a consummate optimist.
Dr. Hood, any quick final thoughts here?
Quick final thoughts. I think one of the solutions is if our health system can produce more researchers on the level of Dr. Hart. I agree with most of what he said and just about everything he said. And if we can implement half of what he said, I think we'd be a long way in success.
This has been a fascinating discussion and one that could go on for another hour, at least, I'm sure. I've been speaking with Dr. Rodney Hood, president and chairman of the Multicultural Health Foundation and a physician and expert on health disparities, medical history, and racism in medical care. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also Dr. Lou Hart. He's medical director of health equity for Yale New Haven Health and assistant professor of pediatrics at the Yale University School of Medicine. Dr. Hart, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such an amazing opportunity and a great discussion.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by San Diego Symphony, presenting the 2024 Conrad Prebys Summer Season, starting at the Rady Shell at Jacobs Park on June 28th, with conductor Gemma New and pianist Olga Kern performing Rachmaninoff, Copland, and Rimsky-Korsakov. Tickets at theshell.org.